the point of this is to provide the best facts-driven show that we possibly can.
Ideally, you have a glue guy who is good.
Hashtag glue guy, hashtag locker room guy. You can't go sign Bobby Holik to $1 trillion. You can't do these things.
Very satisfying.
The absolute best NYR show in town.
This is the Liberty Blue. Rangers Podcast. With Andrew Shelby. And Nick Zeraris.
Rangers fans, welcome to Liberty Blue, the essential New York Rangers podcast. I'm Andrew Chelney, alongside Nick Zeraris. And Nick, they lost to a desperate Pittsburgh team, but they followed it up with three straight wins against the Curtis McDermott-led Devils, for some reason, the Red Wings, and then the Canadiens last night. The Rangers now only have four games left until the real games begin.
We're in the holding pattern. At this point, it's really more about seeding, standings, and games around them. You know, you're not in a position like some of the other teams where you're going to be scoreboard watching, because ultimately the Rangers are more or less in control here. You know, if they win three of their final four games, they're probably going to win the Eastern Conference outright. I know the Bruins are 3 points behind. They've both played the same amount of games, but that's really what it's going to come down to, them and the Bruins. The President's Trophy, it doesn't particularly matter, but for the purposes of our conversation, you know, you want to avoid Tampa Bay in the first round if you can, and that means you have to win the East. You have to stay ahead of Boston. Boston's 7-3-0 in their last 10. They've won four in a row. Their goaltending is really kind of rounded back around. Their offense has been timely enough. And it's interesting because I went back and did some research because I remember the quotes, but I don't remember who had said them. But in 2016, when they got absolutely massacred by the Penguins in round one, before that series, down the stretch, the last few weeks of the regular season, they didn't sit guys. And before that series against Pittsburgh started, Mark Stahl said, "You don't want to tempt the gods. You don't, even if guys are a little dinged up, if you can play, you should play down the stretch in the regular season, because sitting guys, it's bad karma." And the Rangers got absolutely mud stomped by a Penguins team that went on to win the Stanley Cup pretty convincingly. And then the following season, the Rangers did the same exact thing, but they did the opposite. They sat guys down the stretch in those last few games of the regular season because lingering injuries, and they slid to the other side of the bracket because they were a wild card that year. They played Montreal in round one, and they took care of Montreal very handedly. But that was a very convincing series win. And they went to the other side of the bracket where they played Ottawa in the second round, as opposed to would have had to play Washington or Pittsburgh in the second round of that series. So the karmic argument, whether or not you believe
it. I'll never forgive, by the way, Alain Vigneault for losing that series. That was all on Alain Vigneault.
That's a July conversation.
I'm still mad about it. And like, I might be the
that
only
Rangers
person.
Team wasn't going to be Pittsburgh in the conference finals.
They might not have, but you know what? They should have made it there.
I'll give you that. They definitely should have made it there. That Ottawa team was not particularly good. That was Erik Karlsson on one leg being one of the five best players in the world. Mark Stone, Kyle Turris, fuck Jean-Gabriel Peugeot forever. Yeah. Guy only plays well against the Rangers. But back to the point at hand, whether or not you care about the karmic balance of should they sit guys even though they're healthy, that's a conversation. But they are rotating guys in and out. You know, they got Jones in a game. They sat Gustafson. They've made a point of alternating sitting a forward, whether it's Brodzinski, whether it's Rempe, whether it's Cooley. All of that stuff is good. But when we're talking about like injuries and like managing and maintenance, throw some of these guys a bone, man. Give Lindgren a game. Give Trouba a game. Give Gaudreau a game. Give the guys who've got the miles and the injuries, because in 2 weeks there won't be any more opportunities to sit anyone. You know, we've talked a lot about what they're going to do with Rempe in the playoffs, if he's even going to be a regular in the playoff lineup, but they've got to manage this situation down the stretch as far as bodies and availability. Because that's your worst nightmare. You know, you lose someone important down the stretch here, or somebody who has a nagging injury that gets aggravated, and it's someone you can't afford to lose. It's all very tenuous.
That, and I think hockey is the one sport where, yeah, the culture plays a big role in guys just absolutely never wanting to sit ever, which more sports in North America could take a page out of. But the other argument to be made is hockey is such a sport of continuity where if you sit for, and again, I'm not arguing for and against sitting guys. And if somebody's not 100%, absolutely sit them. But I like hockey is the one sport where the argument can be made that if you sit a game or sit a few games, let's just say, for example, it takes you time to get back to pinpoint accuracy of exactly where you want to be on the ice. So let's say you sit the final two games of the regular season, then you play game one of the playoffs. No matter how many practices you go through, you might be at 98% pinpoint accuracy or 97, but you're not quite at that 100 where you would be if you were to play those couple of games. Now these games are essentially meaningless to the Rangers. I would imagine they want to continue to win the Eastern Conference and maybe even the President's Trophy, but from the standpoint of debating over whether it is the right thing to sit players, there's pros and cons. Obviously, if there's guys with a lot of mileage or if they have any sort of injury or anything like that, sit them 100%. I'm not arguing that. But if you're perfectly healthy, it's kind of a coin flip of whether or not the usefulness short term is beneficial or not, because you're leaving some of that, that role that you've been on, maybe a little bit on the table. Is it, is it a lot? Is it a little? Is it maybe not at all for some players? Like, I'm sure if Adam Fox had a game because he wanted to, I'm sure he could pick right back up for where he was because he's Adam Fox. But if you said somebody like a Jacob Trouba, who by all accounts had an okay, a pretty okay game against Montreal, but had a pretty not great week otherwise, if you sit him and then he shows up to game one of the playoffs and he lays another egg, then that's a problem. But if he can build off of his play against Montreal in these last four games and get to game one playing better than what he showed against Pittsburgh last week, then maybe you do that. It's a coin flip and you can argue both ways.
It's a trade-off thing. You know, you think about a graph, you think about a traditional line plot of a 1/1 where it's a direct line. And there comes a point where there's a certain amount of trade-off. Something interesting, and while you were talking, it jogged my memory. The last time the Rangers was in the President's Trophy, I went to the game where they gave them the trophy. And I remember them dressing a few funny names in that game because they were resting guys because they had a lead and they had won it with two games remaining in the regular season. Luminaries in that lineup include Chris Summers, Ryan Bourque, Matt Hunwick, and James Shepard. So maybe, just maybe,
San Jose Sharks legend. I think they got him for a fourth,
something like that,
pick,
yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah,
and then proceeded to not play him.
Yeah, then he got violently concussed. He went to the Devils, got concussed again, and then retired. But yeah. As far as the argument here, I don't think I have a strong take either way. I understand both sides of the argument. In cases like this, where it does feel like Laviolette has a reasonably decent pulse, a decent understanding, I think this is a situation where I am reasonably okay with deferring to the coach. You know me, I'm very anti-authority. I don't like people saying, well, he's in charge. That's the end of the conversation. You should always be skeptical of authority, especially in sports where the consequences aren't that serious. And like, there's no certification, it's not like being a doctor where if you question your doctor, you're kind of being an asshole because you didn't go to med school. There is no hockey school. Yes, Peter Laviolette has been a hockey coach for a long time. There are a lot of people who have been hockey coaches for a long time. So, switching gears. My brain is fried. I've had about 8 hours of sleep over the last 2 days. Switching gears up here. I felt, and we've talked about this a lot this year, I think the reason I feel so much stronger about this group than years past is there's a genuineness to this team that isn't as contrived or as forced in years past, especially last year. Rangers tried so hard from a team, as an organization. I shouldn't say a team. It's not the players' fault. From a team and franchise perspective, to make it seem like last year, we loaded up. We got the super team. We've got all of these guys who've won Stanley Cups with other teams. We've got these guys who have been documented playoff performers. And it was all bullshit. It was all propped up on, we're going to play our goalies better than the other team. And if he's not, we're going to lose, which is what happened this year. And I think it's really fitting that it's a guy like Rempe who has like less than 100 career minutes in the NHL, let alone games played.
More minutes in the penalty box than on the ice.
He has more PIMs than actual minutes. It's a guy like that that brings a group together. You know, we've talked a lot throughout the course of this season about specific moments, like that first win against Carolina, the game where Adam Fox got hurt, or we talk about the stadium series, or we talk about the come from behind win against the Flyers on Saturday, or the come from behind on the Saturday at last month, the come from behind win against the Panthers. And those games, in the course of a long story of a season, when you go on a long playoff run and God willing, you win a championship, you look back at those moments and things about that group is special. Rempe could have just fought McDermott and that could have been the end of it. And it was very stupid for all of those guys to go get ejected from the game eight seconds into the game. But it says something about this group. And they care about each other. And it's very funny that it's a guy who's probably not in the organization's long-term plans who's galvanizing the group like that. But we've said it a lot on the show. The rest of the team appreciates what Rempe does. So even if Rempe's hockey impact is minimal because he plays 6 minutes a game, the impact it has on the other guys on the team is what's valuable. And that moment in the game against the Devils, that was a real, okay, if something special happens later on, that's a game you point back on and say, they really believed in this group and they really fought for each other, literally.
The K'Andre Miller too small gesture was incredible.
Very funny to use that in hockey. Very
it's
funny
incredible. It is. I love that. Like that's and again, like K'Andre Miller's a fight. That was his first major. That was his first fighting major of his career. And my man's ragdolled somebody. And
John
then,
Marino, to be fair, you know, he's got like 4 inches and like 30 pounds on John Marino. But if
he still fought, listen, you got him. He still fought him. He willingly fought the guy. It's not like, you know, John Marino cowered in a corner and K'Andre Miller was like, get over here and we're going to fight. And then, you know, he ragdolled them. It's like, no, they both dropped the gloves. John Marino knew what he was getting into, I guess, maybe. And then he got ragdolled. And then K'Andre Miller was like, you're too small. That's incredible. Like that, like those are the vibes that you can't manufacture. These like those kinds of moments, those kinds of plays are genuine vibe builders that accumulate over the course of a season. This isn't the, you know, we're all fine. We're going to trade for Patrick Kane and we're going to win the Stanley Cup because we're the best team on paper. It's like, that's a manufactured vibe. That kind of vibe you can never manufacture because that is a spur of the moment, confidence, swagger type of thing to do. Like if you're not confident in your team and your ability and all that, you would never make the too small gesture. You just wouldn't. Like that's a confident play, and that is like a very small microcosm of this team as a whole. They are very confident in how they are playing, and they're very confident in each other to get things done.
That game was hilarious. That game against the Devils on so many fronts. The fact they were up 2-0 and blew the lead. The fact they had to dramatically come back. The fact that they had, you know, like 11 guys on the bench for the majority of the game. That was my biggest frustration. I didn't particularly care that everybody fought. It's more so that, you know, you're down an entire line in a D pair 8 seconds into the game and you got a double shift and triple shift guys.
2 seconds into the game.
Thank God the Devils are terrible, or otherwise that would have been a real egg in the face type moment if they started the game with the line brawl, they get out to the 2-goal lead and then blow the game to a team that's basically dead. I know the Devils have like a 1% chance of making the playoffs, but it would have been really egg on the face. So I'm glad they pulled that game out.
The funniest thing about all of that was after not this past Devils game, but the one before that, when McDermott and Rempe didn't fight, and then McDermott after the game was like, I lost a lot of respect for that guy, and he's a generational yapper, that guy. And then after the last Devils game, he was like, I have a lot of respect for this man. Like, dude, stop.
Self-important bullshit.
Same thing with
Travis Green.
Yourself,
Travis Green being all melodramatic, like he's actually going to be the coach of the team next year. Like,
yeah.
I hockey... I love the sport. I very clearly love the sport.
Yeah.
But for a sport that claims to be as tough as it is, the massive insecurity between amongst all of these self-important people.
Yep.
Travis Green, you will not be coach of the Devils next year. And if you are, that's a failure. Curtis McDermott, you should be thanking your lucky stars you are in the National Hockey League. The self-importance and the insecurity, the raging insecurity amongst these guys who only have value by punching other people in the face and know that's all they can do, have to feel important. It's why Ryan Reeves gets asked a question every single game when the Leafs play, because they got to make Ryan Reeves feel important. If he doesn't feel important, he doesn't have any value on the team. So, but
it's really funny that instead of making the game the most important thing, if you're Travis Green, you are, you know,
trying to keep this job.
You are trying everything that you possibly can, right, to continue the season. You know that if you lose this game in regulation, you are all but out of the playoffs. And even then, even if you win in regulation, your chances aren't great, but they're better than what they would be if you lose in regulation. You know this. Everybody on the roster knows this. This is a 100% must-win game. Instead of that, he chooses to win the Yapper Olympics. He sends out his goons. He fights people. He tried to fight Laviolette, which I don't think would have went well anyway. And then they lose the game in regulation. So that just showed what Travis Green's priorities were in that game.
It's performative.
It's very performative. He didn't care about the result of the game. He just wanted to fight and show what kind of, you know, tough coach he is by sending out his goons. It's like, that's great. That's fine. But you lost the game, and therefore you've pretty much eliminated your team from a playoff spot. Congrats, bro.
There's a reason that when general managers get a job for the first time, they go out and get that type of player. Because they need to feel self-important. They need to send a message about their team because they're not as confident in their group. But enough about the stupidity. The power play is getting going, which is nice. Yeah. They definitely were in a bit of a rut there for a little while. It's nice they've got that going again. Come playoff time, you know, the power play opportunities, they're about the same over the course of regular season versus postseason over the last handful of seasons. A few different people have written about this. The biggest thing is just that the longer a game goes, the fewer the penalties you're going to get. You know, you get into those two or three overtime rock fights, you're not going to get opportunities all that often. So with the power play going, with the goaltending reasonably going, you got two of the three, and the 5-on-5 play, it's hard to evaluate at times because some of these games, it sounds stupid to say they've just kind of been messing around, but like they have.
It feels that way, doesn't it?
It feels like they know they can score a goal pretty much if they need to, if they're playing a bad team, like against the Devils, against Ottawa, against Montreal, you know, that they're not, you never want to accuse anyone of taking games lightly, but you can tell the rigidness of the structure is not exactly there right now. They know they can get away with cheating it a little bit, and they are. So you would like that to tighten up, ideally. You don't want to go into that first playoff game playing all willy-nilly, lackadaisical. But speaking of playoffs, we I think the most productive conversation we can have is about the potential first-round matchup, the percentages, what the best. I think we're the only team I don't want to play in the first round is Tampa Bay. Other than that,
I don't want to play Pittsburgh right now. I'll be honest with you.
I'm not scared of Ned.
It's not that I'm afraid of Ned. It's not that I'm afraid of the Penguins as a whole, because they've shown for the vast majority of the season they're not a great hockey team.
No.
Right now, though,
they're very hot.
Right now, they are if not the hottest team in the NHL. Sidney Crosby is looking like he's 24 again. My man's is deflecting pucks from like the back of his he's got the stick on Mars. He's somehow makes that stick deflect pucks into the net. He is looking absolutely insane right now. So if there's any one team, Tampa unless the Rangers lose every game and the Bruins win every game, I don't think that matchup is going to happen. Obviously, I don't want to play Tampa, but of the teams in that second wildcard spot that I don't want to see, Pittsburgh is the one team that I don't want to see just because it would make the Rangers' life harder because of how hot they are, because of how hot Crosby is right now. Yeah, overall, they're not a fantastic team, and I'm sure the Rangers would win the series anyway, but I would rather play anybody else in that spot than Pittsburgh right now. Give me Detroit. Give me Philadelphia. Give me Washington. Give me any of these teams. Ovechkin's great and all, but like Crosby is looking like a man possessed right now. He is on a mission to get this team to the playoffs, and I would rather see anybody else.
I think I understand what you're saying. Pittsburgh is on a nice little run. Washington is weird. The Rangers have played Washington this year. Those games have been tight because Charlie Lindgren is good. He's having a really good season. He's been the strongest reason they hung around as long as they did. You know, if Charlie
they have
Lindgren,
like a -30 goal differential. Like, yeah. This is not Washington, a good hockey team.
-41. I'm looking at, I have the standings up right now. They have a -41 goal differential, and they're 1 point back of Detroit. Of those teams, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Washington, Philly, they're all within 1 point of each other. Detroit is currently in that last playoff spot. We haven't even touched on the Islanders, who look like they're almost assuredly going to either be that second wild card or be the third team in the division. But God, man, all of these teams are, it feels like all of these teams are significantly more flawed then we typically see a team that can make the postseason. Like, I think the record in this playoff format for fewest points to get in is 90. Right now, if the pace is maintained, there's a reasonable chance someone might get in with 88 points, which is just disgusting.
Yeah.
At 88 points, you should be in the playoffs. Like, put another team from the West in before you give one of these teams an opportunity. Like, Detroit is four good skaters, one defenseman, and that's it. Pittsburgh, at this point, it's just Sid Malkin, Letang, Ned, Carlson.
Carlson's been having a great year. Like, genuinely.
I wouldn't say great. He's been good. He's been great.
He's been one of their best performers all year.
That's not saying a lot, to be fair.
It's not. I mean, it's not, but when you're on a team that has been playing this mediocrely for the entire season, and yet
having a solid season.
Yeah, he's been having a pretty solid year.
Washington, I have no idea how they have any wins. You look at that roster, and like Ovechkin had 8 goals at the All-Star break.
Yeah.
You know, he's scored 19 goals in a month and a half, which is great and all, but I like Dylan Strome. I like Sonny Milano. I like the Protoss brother they have. That's not a good team.
No.
You look at these rosters, like, God bless Charlie Lindgren. I want to say he's 7th or 8th still in goals saved above expected if you look at Evolving Wild, but I do not know how some of these teams are hanging around.
Put it to you this way. The Washington Capitals have scored the fewest goals in the entire Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
There are teams that have 4 wins, like Columbus and Montreal, that have scored more goals than Washington. Washington scored 208 goals. Less than Montreal, less than Columbus, like less than a whole lot of teams in most teams in the NHL. Like Seattle has 202, and the three absolute bottom feeders in the West have fewer. But other than that, it's like Washington is by far the worst offensive team anywhere near a playoff spot.
I do not understand how they've hung around as long as they have. Like, other than Lindgren. And, like, they haven't even gotten games. Like, you go and look at their box score. Tom Wilson's played a decent chunk of their games. He's in the 60s. But Oshie's only played 40. Sonny Milano's only played 40. A lot of their players have been dinged up this year. And that's a team that historically has been very injured. But they're really just getting by on vibes in Charlie Lindgren. Like, Lindgren really, you go and look at the numbers, they don't really jump off the screen. A 907 and an 8, and what is that, a 288? I can't even see. Yeah, a 282. But they don't jump off the screen, but good enough to hang around. And like you were talking about before we started recording, the Flyers hit the wall. The Flyers had a really good first 3 months. In January, it looked like they were almost assuredly a lock based on what was going on around them. And I'm looking at it right now, and I just, whoever that is, the reason I am so adamant that the Rangers need to win the East, you get an opportunity to play one of these teams, that is a series you can get done in 5 or 6 games and reassess and then go into the next round with a little bit of juice. Part of the reason the Rangers have had issues on going on these long runs and hit the wall, the games add up. These are not the normal, regular season games of taxing. And I know it sounds very cliche to talk about how difficult the playoffs are and how grueling they are, but it's a different game. The intensity is a lot higher. The emotions are a lot higher. And the emotional tax of going on these long playoff runs, it's real. There's a reason when teams win the Stanley Cup, they collapse to the ground, hugging each other, because they are physically and mentally exhausted. And that's the first time in a month and a half, 2 months, that they've been able to check out and just be like, damn, we did it. The Rangers need this. The Rangers desperately need this. And I really hope they find a way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be great if they did, wouldn't it? I mean, this is, they tied the franchise record for wins in a regular season against Montreal. They have 4 more games to break that record if they so wish. It'd be great if they did, because that would all but guarantee the top spot in the East. Also, the more they win, obviously, that all but guarantees the President's Trophy as well. And we talked about before, no curse. I really don't want to hear about these curses, these silly things that you know, in this particular sense, doesn't exist. It's like the Rangers want home ice advantage the entire way, no matter who they face. Even if they face Dallas in the finals or whoever it is, they want the Rangers want home ice advantage. They're a really good, you know, home ice team. They're 28-10. Like they're a good team. And at the end of the day, this is their best chance. This is one of, if not the best team, at least regular season wise, the franchise has ever seen, and they've been around for nearly 100 years. Like this is a golden opportunity. The first round playoff opponent should not be as difficult as it tends to be in a lot of these playoff matchups. They have a path to success that you don't see often. They have a path to greatness. They just have to follow it. They have to keep it going. It's nearly impossible to win it every year regardless. This is the year where the path is there. It's not a murky, invisible path that, you know, you're going in blind. They are one of, if not the best teams in the league, and their path to ultimate glory is in front of them. They have a roadmap. They can see where they're going. All they have to do is not stray from the path, and they have it.
You go and look. There are 97 seasons of Rangers hockey on Hockey Reference. They are 3 points away, standings points away, from the franchise record. The previous franchise record was the team that won the President's Trophy in 2014-2015 with 113. The Rangers have 4 games remaining. They win 2 of them. Statistically, this would be the best regular season Rangers team of all time. In the most competitive, in the highest skilled, in the most talented period in the history of the sport, that is nothing to take lightly. I know. I agree. I hate being the guy who says if you don't win the Stanley Cup, your season is a failure. But based on this group, the regular season they've had, the future being what it is, it really does kind of feel like it has to be now or never. Yeah. It really does feel like it has to be now or never. And we talked about this a few weeks ago, and I'll reiterate it and I'll reframe the way I want to talk about it because I think it's worth discussing. They are getting career years from so many guys. And I think the biggest inflection and the biggest swing in my perception of the team this year versus last year in the results is I didn't think Vinny Trocheck was this good. I can fully admit it and come out and say, I didn't think Vinny Trocheck was this caliber of a hockey player. Skills wise, he's not elite at anything. He's pretty good at everything. And he was okay last year. It's not like he was bad, but I didn't think he was the number 2 on a team that would make a long playoff run. And yes, it helps that Panarin is simultaneously having a career year while Lafreniere is having his breakout season around him. But he is part of that line, and chalking up this type of success only to his line mates is unfair. And frankly, I have more trust in the forward group than I do in the defense, largely in part because I feel like Trocheck, Panarin, and Lafreniere, if the Rangers need a goal, they can send them out there with Fox and they'll make it happen. I don't feel that way about any other line on this team. And I didn't think I would be able to say that about a line that had Vinny Trocheck on it.
He has been phenomenal. Yeah. Like, you take a look at not just, yeah, his counting stats have been great too, but watch the way he plays. He's the first back on defense. He's making the plays in the corners. He's turned it up to 11 out of 10 on the effort scale, on the play scale. He's been outstanding, and he won the Steven McDonald extra effort award because of that. Because of his absolute relentless play on all ends of the ice. He is everywhere, he is nowhere, he is everywhere all at once, Vinny Trocheck. And that's such a testament to him seizing the opportunity. Yes, again, Panarin, fantastic season. Lafreniere is turning into an all-star before our very eyes. Like, he's been the pass he made last night was an ultimate confidence play out of Lafreniere. I love to see that. But again, that's all fine and dandy, but Vinny Trocheck is one of the three forwards on that line. So if he wasn't playing well, I would have to imagine that line gets less points. Like, that's just how that's how that works. All three forwards have to be playing well for all three players to be having career years. Like, that's the default. So I love what I'm seeing out of Trocheck. I know we were worried about that spot. We were unsure of whether or not he could fit into that role, especially with Hedel out for the year. But my man's has been terrific.
I mean, the organization did too. They came into this year with the expectation that Hedel was going to be the second line center. There was genuine skepticism about Trocheck's ability to play at this level coming into this season, not just from us.
Yeah.
That was the team. You know, when the season started, it was Hedel centering those two. And one thing I wanted to bring up, you mentioned Lafreniere. He's got 56 points this season. 50 of them are at 5-on-5.
That's insane.
You know, and this is something, and this is the main reason I always say points aren't everything. You know, it's about the context in which you create that offense. And you compare, even if we're just talking about time on ice, in not just 5-on-5, just time on ice. You know, he's getting two to three minutes less per game than guys like Panarin, like Zibanejad in overall ice time. That's mostly power play time, but that's ice time. The more ice time you get, the better chance you're going to have to put up counting stats. That's the reason. And there's a direct statistical correlation in terms of your value to your team. Your best years are 23, 24, 25, because that's when you make the least and you're in your physical peak. The years you put up the most and your counting stats are 29, 30, 31, because you've paid your dues down the lineup. You have worked your way up. You are getting that power play one time. You are playing on the first or second line. Maybe you kill penalties too. There's a reason it's those guys who play the most minutes, who put up the most stats, because they have the most opportunities. So Lafreniere getting to do that is great. And one last thing on Trocheck. I went and pulled it up. So I know war is a controversial subject in hockey, and in real life, but for the purposes of this conversation, war as a statistic is a controversial subject because it doesn't quantify everything and there are some holes. But just for the context, I thought Trocheck was going to be fine. I didn't think he would be great. In terms of just his offensive standing points above replacement, he has tripled his production from last year. Evolving Wild had him at 5 flat last year. By the time the regular season ends, he will probably finish with 15. We're talking about three times the production. And yes, some of that is Panarin, some of that is Lafreniere, but this team does not look what it looks like right now if that line isn't playing like that. And two weeks ago, The Athletic did, they ranked the centers of, they ranked every single first line center in the NHL. And Zibanejad, I want to say, was like 14th or 15th, somewhere in there. And the entire blurb was, Zibanejad is really the Rangers' second line center. We probably should write this about Trocheck. Trocheck plays more minutes in all situations. Yep. But the Rangers use Zibanejad as their first line center. But Trocheck is their first line center. That is their first line. Trocheck, yeah, Panarin, yeah. Lafreniere is their first line. And when you say that in your head, you think about it for a second and you're like, are they? And yes, they are. If you go and look at the role they play, how they play, that is the Rangers' first line.
It is. And you think about it over the court, over the, you know, through the context of, if you said that to us a year ago or 2 years ago, we would not be as, like, we wouldn't be confident about it.
Because, unless you, the only way is if you, the only way I would have thought that would happen if Lafreniere went nuclear, like if he had like the full on breakout, but not like this. No.
Watching how he played before this season, if you said to us, oh, Lafreniere is going to be in the top line with Panarin and Trocheck, how many points do you think the Rangers are going to have 78 games into the season? If you would have said to us, you know, 110, I don't think we'd believe you. Like, let's be honest with us. Like, that's insane. But that's how good that line has been. And also, you know, it's I don't want to hide the negatives here. The Rangers have 110 points, but like that, it does also say a lot about Kreider, Zibanejad, and insert right winger here. Because as we've seen, Jack Roslovic already healthy scratch and off of that first line, they double shifted VZ. So it while that's awesome for, you know, Panarin, Trocheck, and Lafreniere, that other line, not ideal.
Roslovic hasn't clicked.
No.
I don't think that's entirely on him. Like we talked about that. We've talked about this for 3 months now. Whoever they brought in to play with Zibanejad and Kreider was not magically going to fix everything. I think Roslovic has tools. I think he's got potential. I think he was an upside play and he's got the potential to make an impact, but it hasn't clicked. That's not to say it won't, but he has yet to really click in that spot. VZ did a nice job with playing with them. You know, that was something we advocated for over the month of February when they were in that kind of tepid, unsure what they were going to do in that spot. And they still played Blake Wheeler there until he got hurt. VZ has earned the trust and he has earned the responsibility to play a little bit more. You know, he's a little bit overqualified to just be a fourth liner. He's got a little bit more to his game than that. But on the flip side, if he is on your fourth line, you probably have a pretty good fourth line. Yeah. You know, God bless Gaudreau doubling his goal total against Detroit. You know, you got to pay the bill somehow. I know he knows he needs to be better, but you can't help but feel good for the guy.
Absolutely.
You know, it's moments like that where in a long season, if something special happens, you get to look back and say, remember when Gaudreau scored 2 goals against Detroit? Remember at the beginning of March when people were worried about the Rangers having to play Detroit in the first round?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I tweeted this out, you know, during the Detroit game.
It was a good joke.
I genuinely want nothing more on this planet than Barclay Goodrow going on a video game like heater, like the, you know, like the next 2 months on route to a cup. It would be great if it happened. And then he scored again. And then I quoted and said, we're cooking. Like as much as we, you know, talk about Goodrow's bloated contract and him not performing to expectations or to his expectations or the team's expectations or whichever expectations that you want to throw, he's not meeting any of them. And I'm sure he knows that. Everybody that watches him play knows that. It's not a secret. The team knows this as well. At the same time, you know, it's not like we bring this up because we want him to do poorly. I would love for, like I said, the tweet, like I just read in my tweet, I would love for him to all of a sudden score 12 goals in the playoffs and they win the Stanley Cup. Like, that would be awesome. I don't know how awesome that would be for, you know, they might give a lifetime extension after that, and I would not want to see that. But if they win the cup, I don't care. It's fine. Everything is fine and dandy if the Rangers win the Stanley Cup. So I would love Goodrow to score 20 goals. I would love Trouba to score 30 goals in the playoffs. Like, that's the thing, is like, we highlight these things not because we like highlighting negativity. It's like, hey, these are the problem areas of this team, and we would like it if these things were improved. I would like to improve society somewhat. And then somebody comes out of the woodwork, you know, it's a, you know, and yet you participate in society. Oh, interesting. It's like, yeah, like, of course, all we want to do is improve.
See, the problem with that is you can't bring logic into a sports argument a lot of the time. And a lot of people don't think about sports in like the same way you would have like a philosophical or a theoretical debate. They purely argue off of vibes and emotion, which like that's what makes sports unique and makes conversation within sports interesting. But yeah, you perfectly summed it up as far as the but yet you participate in society thing. Last thing I wanted to touch on before we get out of here.
I bring that up because somebody tweeted at me.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I can't believe like it needs to be studied that there's been three head coaches now that have all watched Miller and Trooper play together on a pair and it hasn't worked and yet they're still together. And then someone who essentially is a first name bunch of numbers guy, he's like, it amazes me how Laviolette coaches a team to, you know, this many points and best record and fans question him like they somehow know better than just by watching games on TV, to which I then quote tweeted that meme. It's like, that's great, but just because things are great doesn't mean things can't get better.
The gap is small, man. It's really that straightforward. That's been my recurring theme of the season. The Rangers have been really good, but it takes great to win the Stanley Cup. And it takes greatness in a very very specific stretch over a very tight period of time. And you go cold for 3 days, your season's over. Yep. So the gaps are small. You know, the Panthers, who we thought were infallible, have looked very mortal over the last few weeks. The East feels maybe as wide open as it's ever been.
Yeah.
Like I struggle to think of a season where going into the playoffs, it felt like the Rangers were genuinely the best team in the East. Like even in 2014 and 2015, I didn't feel the Rangers were the best team in the East. I didn't feel like that 2 years ago. I didn't feel like that last year. What was the year? 17? Yeah, 16, 17. I didn't feel like it that year. This genuinely feels like the first time in my life going into the playoffs, the Rangers are or have a real argument to be the best team in the Eastern Conference.
All that has to happen now is that they get through these next four games in one piece. I don't want to see anybody fighting. I don't want to see anybody throwing any hits that could lead to suspensions or, you know, put themselves in a bad situation. Yes, obviously the point of these next, like, you want them to win. You still want them to play well. Just get to the playoffs without any more injuries. That's the key here. You get there in one piece. You go from there. You play your game. You know, don't do anything that might compromise that. You see the finish line. You see the finish line to get to the next part of the stage. It's like the relay race where you see your teammate up ahead and you are sprinting towards him. The one thing you don't want to do is trip and fall and break your leg, because that ruins everything.
Yeah. All right. So the Rangers, this is Money Puck's probability. Depending where you look, the odds are within a couple percentage points of each other, but each model favors different things. So Money Puck thinks the Rangers are almost assuredly going to win the division, and they've got a really strong chance of winning the President's Trophy, you know, close to 90% first overall, which would mean playing Wild Card 2. Wild Card 2 in the Eastern Conference right now is most likely to be Detroit, according to Money Puck, but depending on whose model you look at, you might get a different team. If they were to go into round one against Detroit, I think that's, frankly, a great matchup for them. Detroit is very dependent on individual players making plays outside of structure. They are dependent on shooting talent. And we know the Rangers can play a tight defensive game that can stymie that type of play. The only real concern against Detroit is the rush. You know, Detroit is pretty good at turning the games into track meets because they don't have a good defense. They know that if they're going to win games, they need to try and make these games high speed, up and down trading chances, and shootouts aren't the most comforting type of playoff series. You know, you mentioned that Ottawa series in 2017 where nobody played defense on either team and they just went back and forth trading odd man rushes until one team scored. A lot of the time it was Ottawa. A lot of the time Nick Holden and Mark Stahl were bumping into each other as they skated backwards and letting guys I had never heard of score goals. But right now, you should feel good. You should feel reasonably confident. get to the playoffs in one piece, hopefully win the Eastern Conference. I'm not going to say I'd be upset. I'd be a little disappointed if they had to play Tampa in round one.
I don't want the Rangers to play Tampa. And because we talked about this, like, you would so much rather deal with round one as quickly as you can against a team that isn't as dangerous as Tampa Bay. That's exactly the reason why I don't really want to play Pittsburgh right now. And because they're on such a massive heater, and you don't want to play a team like that in the first round. You would much rather, and again, it's the playoffs, you know, you never don't take anybody lightly, et cetera, but in terms of matchups, I would be so much more comfortable watching the Rangers play Detroit or Washington or Philadelphia in the first round than I would them playing Tampa Bay, even though they have played well against Tampa Bay all season long. Tampa Bay has turned it up lately. They've been playing a lot better than they have been, you know, earlier on the season. I don't want to see them play them in the first round. I don't want to see them play Pittsburgh because of how hot they are in the first round. I would Flyers have lost 7 in a row. Give me the Flyers in the first round. They are faltering. They're falling apart at the seams. If they get to the playoffs, that'd be great for the Rangers. You made short work of them, and then you sit back and you wait as the other teams kill each other.
It'd be nice, man. It would be nice for the Rangers to catch a break in the playoffs for once. All right, I shouldn't say that, but they've definitely caught breaks, you know.
Yes.
Trouba violently concussing Sidney Crosby, not getting in trouble for it.
Yeah.
That was breaking things the Rangers' way. That'll do it for this week's episode of the Liberty Blue Podcast. Make sure you are subscribed wherever you get your podcast. Leave a 5-star review if you could be so kind on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you are watching over on YouTube, subscribe button, like button, leave a comment. Let us know who you would like the Rangers to play in the first round. We'll talk to you guys soon.